Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our very special guest is Meg Lewis, a designer, comedian, performer, and co-host of many amazing podcasts. And we're going to talk about finding your own personal design style. This episode is brought to you by UserList, a lifecycle messaging tool for your SaaS product. At UserList, our mission is to make your founder journey more enjoyable and less overwhelming. That's why we built an email automation tool that does exactly what you need, no more, no less. Manage your users, segment them, and get in touch throughout their journey, all based on their behavior. Try UserList free whenever you're ready at userlist.com. Hi, Meg.
Hi.
Super thrilled to have you today.
I'm so happy to be here. It's nice to, I can see your face, which is really nice. I haven't been able to interact with many humans in a long time. So I'm excited to have any kind of interaction I can get these days.
Before we get started, tell us your background story. You're such a special person to talk about design style, because if anyone just goes to your personal website, you're going to immediately understand why I'm saying that. So it's like screams at the guest. And tell us, how did you arrive at that point?
Yeah, it's taken a very long time to get here, for sure. Throughout my life growing up, especially as a teenager and also in my 20s, I was that person that I was living a very curated life, especially growing up, like being in my 20s with social media. I would post things that I would see other people posting them. So I thought, okay, that person has a lot of followers and they're posting things that look like this, so I'll just do that too. And I did that with everything. So the way that my apartments, I would decorate them, and the way that other people decorated their apartments. And I was so afraid of showcasing any of myself that even in real life interactions, I would curate everything about me. So I would rehearse what I was saying, what I wanted to say in my head first, and then approve it with myself. And then I would say it out loud once it got approved. And that kind of stuff was just the way that I lived, because I had been trained throughout my whole life to realize that anytime I was different or unusual or weird at all, people would make fun of me. So if I wanted to wear the clothes I really wanted to wear, you know, I would get called out on it and people would make fun of me, or they just point it out and laugh or make comments. And so eventually when I got to my 20s and a career as a designer, I just had kind of been defeated and I decided to just assimilate with everybody else. And that really happened with my design work as well. I was told in school and growing up that you study what successful people do and you just do that. So I would study the way other designers were designing, what their websites looked like, and I just made stuff that looked like theirs. And eventually, over time, over many years of working that way, I wasn't having much success in the fact that people didn't love working with me. Like, I wasn't making anything I was really proud of. I was really trying to study other people's designs and mimic them. And I was really not able to ever make anything that looked as good as that stuff. And it was just not going well. But throughout all of that, I would have one or two clients, one or two projects that went really, really well. And I had to kind of zoom out and assess why those projects were going so well. And it's because they were projects that were working in a specific style that I was like really comfortable with, that I was having a lot of fun with. They were projects that were working to make the world a happier place. They were usually projects that had clients that liked their job. And so I just had to realize, like, wait a minute, these specialized projects where I get to have fun and like play a little bit more, and I feel safer to showcase who I am and what my own design style might be able to be, those were the ones I was enjoying the most. So then I just had to go through so many self-discovery exercises to figure out who I actually was and what a design style for myself could possibly look like and how I could make something, make many things that look unlike the things anybody else is making. And it wasn't an overnight change at all. It took little tiny, teeny tiny steps forward, like little experimentations and practices to see what would work and what wouldn't work. And you know, every time I tried something new that was out of my comfort zone of showing myself, I was so scared. But eventually I just retrained my brain because every time I would do it, I realized that nobody made fun of me. Nobody called me out. Nobody said anything. Everybody just encouraged me and supported me. And eventually my brain just got retrained to realize that it's not actually that bad if you show who you are. And I think that's a lot of thanks to the friends that I have, the people I've worked around, the clients I've had that have been judgment-free and been very supportive in allowing me to explore who I am. But it's just been retraining my brain and then doing it more and more and more. And now I'm hooked. I love showing my personality. I love showing who I am everywhere. I'm not afraid anymore. I don't care if people judge me anymore. And it feels very amazing. And it has helped me create a really fulfilling career for myself too.
That's one of my favorite parts of being, you know, growing up, being a grown up, whatever you call it, because you have these years of experiments and you have more credibility over time and you have more confidence and it just gets better, right?
Exactly.
But it's amazing how you told us so much about yourself without saying any facts whatsoever. So imagine our listeners don't know what you do. How does this amazing creativity translate into everyday stuff? So you do client work. You run a few podcast shows. You have other things on your plate. What are they?
Yes. So in addition to doing client design work, I have two podcasts. One is a podcast I host for Dribbble, which is a design news podcast called Overtime. My other podcast is a comedy, mindfulness, and meditation podcast called Sit There and Do Nothing. I also founded a collective of designers and commercial artists like over 10 years ago called Ghostly Ferns, and we still are in operation and running. What else do I do? I'm a part of a group called Co-Loop, which is an artist management company, but we're really just built on the, you know, on the basis of collaboration and working together and lifting one another up all the time. I also live in Minneapolis, and here in Minneapolis, I have a shared co-working workspace that I own and operate. At the end, wow, there are probably so many. Oh, wait, I forgot. I always forget some. I have Full Time You, which is a personal brand and career fulfillment destination that I've created, which houses a self-discovery workbook and comedy video series. It also has all of my Find Your Own Personal Style curriculum teachings, which I'll have, you know, more books and more videos coming out soon for. So there's a lot. There's probably more I've forgotten. I really should create like an acronym or like a song for myself to sing every time I have to remember everything I do, because I seem to always leave out at least one or two things.
If we distill this to things that, well, actually make your money and make your living, and that's probably the client work to some extent. So what do you do for your clients as a designer?
Yes. So that's a great point to talk about money, because yes, the money part comes from the client work. Most of the things that I do not pay me hardly any money. And the client work is there because I love it. But it's also very important because it actually pays me money. So for clients, I like to think of myself as a generalist in the fact that I have, you know, I've been doing design for long enough to where I've specialized in many different areas. I started out mostly as a product and UI designer and did a lot of web work as well. And then I kind of translated more into brand design and strategy. And then I kind of got to this point now where I'm being hired less as a problem solver at all and more as an artist because I have such a defined personal style that people hire me for. So now I work as this like kind of weird designer meets artist space where usually brands or agencies approach me and they say, hey, we have this problem. We already came up with a solution, and we think that your specific design style is the best visual solve for this problem. And so I like that for now because I got really tired of solving other people's problems. And I realized that that's an important design skill, and a lot of people are great at solving problems and love problem solving. And so that's amazing. whenever you're a problem solver as a designer, you make a lot more money. So keep doing it. But for me, I just kind of got burnt out on solving problems and I just wanted to design. I just wanted to make things look nice. And I think there's nothing wrong with that as long as somebody is solving the problem well. And so that's where I work now. I work in the space where other people have come up with a great solution for a problem. And then they grab me and they say, hey, Meg, we want to work with you to come up with a visual solve here. And then within that, I do, of course, adapt my style a little bit here and there to best fit the solution. But really, I'm working with mostly tech companies, mostly media organizations to apply design to solutions. So that can be through a number of things. I do a lot of environmental design now. I do a lot of still web experiences and creating illustration and brand design systems for communication and marketing, all kinds of stuff. I also get to do a lot of physical projects like murals, which is great and fun. I do a lot of textile designs for brands. And then as well for client stuff, I also do a lot of performance-based work. So hosting podcasts, hosting video series, creating content for brands where my face is there doing funny and weird stuff. I get to do a lot of that as client work too, which is like kind of outside of design, but I always make sure that I make them let me do design work alongside of it. So in addition to creating, you know, performance-based content, there's also a lot of designed pieces that go along with it. And I think that's really the wonderful part about having a design skill set is that I can utilize it and use it as much as possible too.
Before we dive into the main topic, please touch upon the comedian slash performer aspect of your life. What does that even mean? You know?
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a comedian when I grew up. I wanted to be like a comedic actor, meaning I wanted to do characters and I just wanted to be funny. I didn't necessarily want to do stand-up, but I just wanted to make people smile and I wanted to make the world a happier place when I was a kid. And, you know, that magic kind of got bonked out of my brain as I got older because people told me I couldn't. You know, enough people said, like, you know, either women aren't funny in passing or just like that it was an unrealistic dream. And so I conformed and realized like, okay, yeah, it's pretty unlikely that I'll become a comedian. So I'm going to fall back on more traditional career path of some kind. And, you know, in going through all these self-discovery exercises that I've done for myself throughout trying to determine what design career I can have that's unique for me, I really realized that my career was missing out on so many of the things that have inspired me throughout my life that make me who I am, which is a lot to do with comedy. So I intentionally have been constantly looking for opportunities to inject comedy throughout my career. And a lot of that is just making up stuff on my own, like making my own comedy video series, trying to work design, education, and comedy together with my comedy mindfulness podcast. That has nothing to do with design, but I just enjoy it. And it's something that I can offer the world that nobody else can because my brain isn't unique. And of course, I can use my design skill set as a way to design beautiful things for that podcast and for the brand of the podcast and for the sets of the videos that I'm creating. So it's really been not as hard as I expected to mix comedy and design. It's just something that no one else is doing, but that doesn't mean that it's intangible and that I can't do it.
Are you actually enjoying the whole production of side of things, or is there a team that's taking that off your plate and you just get, you know, to spend time in front of the camera / microphone?
It depends. So, you know, a lot of these things I do on my own and nobody's paying me to do them. So I do it all. I do everything. Like with my podcast and with my video series, I often record, edit. I've learned how to do it all. And I am just doing it because if it's not going to make me any money, I'm not going to spend any money offloading those things. So until those specific projects start earning cash, then I might delegate some tasks to other people. But if I'm doing something for a client, then usually if they want it to be high quality, they're going to need to have a professional come in and do all of those things for me because I'm not capable. I don't know nearly enough. My videos that I record and edit myself look pretty low quality. And I think that's a little bit of the charm. But if it's for another brand, then usually I get to offload those things to somebody else.
Awesome. Let's talk about personal style. And it's great that in the beginning of our conversation, you already shared your personal design journey to an extent. So let's speak about the general side of things. Why does one even need to define the style per se? What is a personal style?
Yeah, so I think if we're talking about designers and specifically, I think you need to first determine where on that spectrum of designer as a problem solver to designer as an artist you want to be. Because most designers want to be on the problem solver side, and that's okay, because again, that makes the money. And it's an important thing, like everybody, we have to have these problems solved. So if you're on the problem solver side of the spectrum, I think it's often told to us that we need to not have a personal style. We need to put our own personal tastes aside so that we can solve the problem appropriately. And that's totally understandable. And I agree. But as a creative or as an individual in general, even if you're not creative, everybody needs to determine a personal style, because you have to be able to visually represent yourself when you dress yourself or whenever you are decorating your home or your apartment. We all need personal style for something. Whenever you're creating your website or your own brand materials for yourself, if you start a side project, you might need to have a personal style. There's a lot of opportunities that we can need personal style, even if we're mostly a problem-solving creative. So I think that that's important to mention, because for me, I can ooze my personal style all day, everywhere I go, because I'm not a problem-solving designer anymore, and this is what I enjoy doing. It's such a part of my life, but you don't need to be like me. You can still solve problems for brands. You can still put your own personal style aside for your job, but you still need a personal style in some capacity in order to live a more fulfilled life, because you're showcasing what makes you who you are visually. And I can tell from personal experience that once you finally translate your wardrobe into a personal style that's reflective of who you are, it makes you feel so much better. It makes you feel more confident. It makes you feel validated and seen by your own self. It really helps with self-confidence. So it's an important practice to introduce and to an important exercise to at least start to go through in order to just feel a lot more secure and confident about who you are.
It took me years to be brave and become brave enough to just go and buy like three of the same shirt, you know, because I'm definitely on the anti-creative side of the spectrum. So like bringing that to the wardrobe took some braveness.
Yeah. And I think it happens because we're trained our whole lives, no matter where you come from, that we have to conform to these standards that truly don't mean anything, that people just kind of made up. And we've learned, like, it's just been ingrained in our brains since growing up, that anytime you do anything that's a little bit different than most people, it's bad. So it's, of course, like everybody struggles with this. Everybody struggles with having a style that's unusual or different from other people's, because we're just taught to conform. And that's how you succeed, is by conforming. And it's just not true. So that's what I'm really excited about, is like having everybody kind of unlearn that and reposition and reframe it and finally get really excited about how they can visually represent who they are.
I find it to be a recurring topic here. Among the latest episodes, we had Austin Church lately talking about how to define a brand by bringing personal things in it. And then there was Brad Flowers recently who was talking about naming, and he said, like, the product name, forget about the customers. Like, you're going to be presenting the brand, you're going to have to love it first. And then the customers, yes, they do exist as a target audience, but they're not even close to being important in that regard. That was such a surprising insight for me. So we're going to link to those episodes in the show notes too. What do you think is the process? Let's say our listeners, somewhat established designers or entrepreneurs, they have their own platforms of expressing themselves online, but there might be not that scale of maturity that you've achieved over the years. Yeah. So what can they do to analyze their past work and make their journey more crisp and clear in terms of personal style?
Yeah. So I think that the process is both extremely simple on paper, but it's a process that most people don't, they go their whole lives without doing. So it's also like a very hard task. But what I recommend is just doing some light list making to start, and make lists for what about your personality makes you who you are. Like, what are the personality traits that make you a unique person, that whenever you take all of those personality traits and you put them together, it creates a person that is unlike anybody that exists, and that's you. So like, we all have personality traits that maybe some of them we might have in common with other people, but when you list out all of them, there's nobody else who has your exact list. So I think what I like to do is go through each of those personality traits and put visuals to them. So I think it's really important through this exercise that whenever you're putting visuals to them, I like to just do quick mood board very fast, or just dump images into a folder on my desktop. And what I try to do during this process is, if you're a designer, do not look at anybody else's work during this process, because then you'll be influenced by somebody else's personal style. So what I like to do is say I'm going through my personality traits, and one of them is the fact that I love change. That's true. So whenever I'm making a mood board or dumping files or images into a folder, I think, what about change do I love? What's important to me about change? For me, I love the changing seasons. So I just Google changing seasons. I find the first image and I plop it in a folder. And this process is very frustrating as a designer, because we're so used to putting beautiful images together. So it's counterintuitive to just grab an ugly image from Google Images, but it's worth it, I promise. So then I think about, what else do I love about change? I've always loved people who change their facial expression really fast, like those masks where one side is like smiling, the other side's frowning. Love that. So I grabbed an image of that, popped it in, and just keep going. I've always loved black and white stripes. I've loved contrast between black and white. I've always, my whole life, loved black and white contrast. So I popped that in. And so just keep grabbing images for each personality trait, and then go open those folders, go look at those mood boards, and just make lists and jot down what you're noticing. Are there colors that are emerging? Is there a color palette that's emerging? Are there any common themes that are emerging? What are the emotional things that you're feeling through these images? I like to look at the different mood boards or files and folders and look at if there's tension, because a lot of us have personality traits that don't normally go together visually. Like, you could be an extremely chaotic, neurotic person that has like a brain that's moving so fast, but you could also be really organized. And visually, those things don't fit together. And the tension there, the tension between two things that don't normally fit together visually, is the most exciting part, because that means you can put two things that don't normally go together together, combined with everything else. And that's how you create a visual style that visually looks different from anything that exists, because you are unlike anyone that exists. So in addition to doing these mood boards or image collection for your personality traits, I also like to make sure that one gets made for like the lifelong points of inspiration that you've had your whole life. So the things that were really inspiring and energizing to you as a kid that have remained true all the way up until today. So we likely have at least a handful of things that we loved when we were a kid that seemed like maybe a little bit unusual, or maybe like a little unique to you, that have still remained true today. And the reason why I like you to focus on those things is because it's less likely to change as you get older, because we're constantly changing and growing and learning new information about ourselves. So I want to make sure that you're able to create a personal style that's less likely to need to fluctuate and change as you go. And of course, it will need to a little bit, but making sure that you pick personality traits that have remained true about yourself your whole life, pick points of inspiration that have remained true about you your whole life, it helps you to make sure that you're creating a personal style that isn't based on trends. It's not based on where you're at right now. It's more based in who you truly are at your core, which I think is really beautiful and amazing. And just the validation of going through this exercise, I think, will help you to understand why you've been making some of the decisions you've been making so far. It kind of just helps you to justify yourself, but it also keeps you making sure that every decision you make feels really meaningful and true to who you are and uninfluenced by anyone else, which I think is really, really empowering.
Well, this concept, sort of zigging when everybody else is zagging and following your own path instead of following the trend, that's definitely a very, very wise idea. But I'm struggling to understand, let's say you like the contrast of black and white, you like the change of seasons, you like chairs and lamps. You told me that in our pre-recording chat. How does that translate into this creative explosion of color that we can see on your website, for example?
Yes.
How does one transform in the other?
Yeah. So that's the wonderful contrast and tension that I'm talking about. Because whenever I looked through my own personal style exercise and looked through these mood boards that I made for myself, there was a pretty common color palette that emerged throughout all of my boards. And I wrote them down every time I saw them through the changing seasons. I saw it. I saw green and red and orange and pink and blue and through all my other boards, because a lot of my lifelong points of inspiration have a lot to do with circus arts and performers and that space and jugglers and clowns. And so seeing all of those colors, they were so common. There was a very common color palette that emerged. But the tension there was that also what emerged was so much black and white contrast. I've always loved black and white silent films, silent comedy movies. I love mimes so much. And so looking at expressionful faces and using bodies to show expression, I saw that a lot throughout my mood boards. So I had to try and find a way to mix this bright, colorful color palette with black and white. And I had to try to mix that with expression-filled faces and bodies and movement and comedy. And so doing that helped me to put things that don't normally go together, like, for example, the contrast of black and white with a bunch of color. I had to make sure that I utilize both of those through my personal style. And so now with my personal style guidelines that I've created out of this exercise, I make sure that everything I design has my colors in it, my bright color palette, but I also make sure that it has black always and as much contrast between black and the colors as possible, because the black and white thing is such a huge point of inspiration to me. And it's such a huge part of my personality and what has made me who I am.
I have a problem as someone who tries to bring my design taste into my wardrobe. For example, I love the stark colors on screen, the black and white on screen, some bold typography that makes me really excited. But when I try to put something like that on myself as clothes, I don't look so great because I'm more of a muted color type. What do we do then?
Yeah, great question. And I think that there's an exercise that needs to be had there, because I'm kind of similar to you in that I have a similar problem where, like, my work is so colorful, but I feel really, really comfortable wearing black. And that's a normal thing because black makes everybody feel really comfortable. And it's just, that's a thing. So what I had to do was say, like, okay, this makes a lot of sense because black and white has been such a huge part of my life that makes sense why I feel great in black. But I also think I need to make sure that I inject more color into my wardrobe. And so through this exercise, I started branching out and wearing more and more color. And so because I need, in my personal style, I need to have color and black and white, what I do is I make sure that I'm dressing mostly in black because it's what makes me feel my best. I feel powerful whenever I wear black, which is a good thing. I'm not going to change that. But I make sure that I use blocks of color and pops of color through, like, accessories and the shoes I wear and, like, wearing hats or earrings and making sure that I bring color into myself in that way has been really important to me. So finding ways to finagle my personal style guidelines to what I'm wearing has been really important. But I also have realized through the practice that there have been so many times throughout my life where I've been influenced by trends or seeing somebody that's wearing something and saying, like, wow, I love how that looks. So I buy it, I put it on, and it makes me feel like garbage. And that's because it means nothing to me. It has nothing to do with who I am. It has nothing to do with what makes me feel powerful and makes me feel seen. And so there have been lots of times throughout my life where I've tried to buy brown pants and I put them on and it just doesn't work for me. And I would feel so frustrated because I would see other people and it worked for them. So I've had to realize over time that, especially when it comes to design and personal wardrobe, what works for somebody else and what is great for somebody else isn't going to be great for me. And just realizing that and letting that go has been a huge exercise for me to have to do, because I think especially as creatives, we constantly compare ourselves to other people's, especially with their creative work, and we get jealous. We think we're not as good or that we don't belong. And it's just because they're doing their thing and they aren't us. We're different people. So it's taken a long time for me to realize that. And I hope in some ways, like, going through this exercise with your personal wardrobe style will help you to identify why wearing the things that you enjoy wearing are working for you, because I'm sure that there's a lot of reasons as to why those things are getting shown in your wardrobe and making you feel really comfortable. And I'm sure that there's definitely a meaningful reason behind who you are and why that's happening.
I love how our digital design conversation transformed into finding your wardrobe style, but that's a whole separate topic, really. For example, we work offline or work online, but whenever there is a conference or an online event, which is a few times a year max, so I can safely drift between seasons without updating my public wardrobe. It's such a stress to be close for the conference or anything, because yes. I feel now I have this physical body that I have to represent beyond face on camera that everybody sees here.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
But let's say a designers, they have their personal website, they can design it according things they discovered, but we do client work. So how do we make sure we're reflected in everything we do for our clients? We keep the things different while staying within your own comfortable, or maybe not comfortable, boundaries of style.
Yeah. And I think that's where you need to determine where you want to be on that spectrum of problem solver to artist, because I think as a problem solving designer, I would hope that this exercise in finding your own style is transformative enough for you that you then take this exercise and apply it to brands, because the same thing applies. This is how I work with brands on brand design. The same rules apply. Like every brand can have a style that's unique to them, because you take the personality and the traits of the brand, their company culture, their audience, and you smush all that together. And whenever you take all these qualities of all of these things that nobody has ever put together before, you're able to create a style for that brand that is unlike anything else that exists. There's no need to look at a competitive analysis and say like, well, everybody else in the yogurt space is doing this, so we need to do this too. I think that we need to start taking these exercises into brand design spaces, into marketing design spaces, and say, we can do the same exercise. You're able to determine a unique brand and a unique personal style for every brand through similar exercises. It's less than like, you know, gushy self-discovery as far as personality goes with looking back lifelong points of inspiration for a brand. And it's more of putting visuals to what makes that brand truly special and unique. And how can you find the tension in a lot of those points of what makes that brand so unique, and then be able to put visuals to those points of tension and smoosh things together that don't normally get smooshed together. So I would hope that you can take these wonderful exercises and activities in finding your own personal style and actually bring that into problem solving for brands, because the exercise can be so similar.
As I personally aged as a designer, as a consultant, I discovered that I keep shipping the same kind of solutions, both on the visual side of things and like UX recipes, problems solved. And I started being guilty about it. Is there a reason to feel guilty? Shall we get outside of our comfort zone and ship like unknown creative solutions, which is a word I hate in that context? What's your opinion there?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I totally know. I think especially when it comes to problem solving, patterns are so important. Like we're taught that you follow patterns because people are used to those patterns. And, you know, my favorite thing to do is to just be aware of what the patterns are and why they exist and do they actually need to exist or not? Because a lot of times, again, this is like, I can't stop making this argument, but the people that determine what patterns are usually and most often the people that have the loudest voice or the most power. And so they just kind of get to determine what's good or what's bad. And the rest of us just get used to following along and following the trend and conforming to what that is. And I understand the argument for patterns because they make usability more, you know, expected, and that's good for people to be able to use products. So they're important. But I think the first exercise is just to be aware of whenever you are repeating yourself and ask yourself, why am I repeating myself? Just because it's easier for me and I don't want to do extra work, don't want to do more work than I have to? Or am I repeating myself because it's actually promoting a more inclusive design space and a more usable product, then I think that's okay. But I think just kind of always assessing why you're making the decisions you make and who put those decisions in place and why are you following them? Are they important to follow or not? I think just that kind of self-assessment constantly while you're creating something has been really helpful for me, because it's helped me to realize along the way that I actually don't agree with some of the decisions I had been making for years that, you know, UX design or UI design standards had been telling me to make. And just practicing with breaking the rules and breaking boundaries and redefining new systems has been a practice that I've been introducing into my career over the past few years. And I think it's been nice, but that's a lot of pressure to put on yourself. So I think starting by just kind of assessing your thoughts and your decisions is the best first step that you can take.
I can say that there are two types of successful design professionals, and one type is totally clear. Like, I understand how this career path works is by niching down in a certain skill or craft. Let's say web application design. So you do that for multiple products, you become really good at it, and then you get hired for more web applications. And that's reasonable because you're really good at them and you know everything about the industry and you carry on your design style there. But there is also this another kind of wild creative person who, you know, one day dabbles in podcasts, another day they get invited to design chairs for someone. And I am talking to you because you somewhat represent this type of a creative person to me. How do you make it commercially viable? How do these amazing, you know, furniture companies just even hear about you to invite you to design chairs for you when you're, you know, another industry person?
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you brought this up because this is very important. And I don't like I don't want people to listen to this podcast and assume they need to change their life so that it's more like mine, because I think both types of careers are super important and both work for different people for different reasons. My personality needs the way that I work for many reasons, but the reason why I work the way that I do and have a career that's like a selection from the a la carte menu is because like everybody, I am a person who has so many different personality traits and qualities and interests and things that I want to be doing in this world. And it's been hard for me to just choose one and stick with that because I like change so much. So having a career that allows me the freedom to do a little bit of everything is very fulfilling to me because it lets me get out every single part of my brain and my skill set that I want to get out. It allows me to utilize my full personality and all of that. And so it's very fulfilling for me. But what I've learned through not niching down in the way that most people do and through having a career that's unlike anybody else's is that it's a harder fight. It's not as easy to make money because my deliverable of what I'm doing for people is muddled. It's not as succinct. The messaging isn't as clear. And so if I wanted to go and play the system and go back to being a product designer or a UI designer, I could do that. And I would probably make a lot more money. I would go higher up the ladder and that sort of in that field, in that industry. And I'd become a known voice that people would look to if I wanted to. And that is one option. If I wanted to make more money and have a more traditional career, that I could do that. But what I like to do is to create a career that's a little bit more fulfilling to me, which means less money, unfortunately, but it means like just advocating for myself more, being self-motivated, fighting really hard to create new things that only I can create. And as long as I'm really succinct in my marketing and positioning of myself as a person who works throughout all media to make the world a happier place and to help other people shine. That's my mission. I do a bunch of things within that, and it's very confusing for a lot of people, and I understand that. And there's not too much I can do about that because I'm doing something unlike anybody else. So it works for me because I want to have the most fulfilling career possible for myself, and this is the way I need to do it. But there's nothing wrong with either type. I think it's just assessing what makes you feel the most secure and what you need to feel the most fulfilled. And stop getting in your own way and allow yourself to make it happen for yourself.
I would add that filtering out new projects to something that you're really excited about is a big one, where you're brave enough to give up profitable projects that are not exactly along your line, right?
Yeah, it's so hard. It's so hard. But what I found, the easiest way for me to do that is through this little workaround system that I found, where anytime a new client wants to work with me, I have this like pitch deck, which I know a lot of us do for ourselves. I have this pitch that I give them where I outline, here's me, here's the style I work within, here are the companies that I work for, because I work for what I call happy companies, which are companies that are looking to make the world a healthier, happier place, either like through their product or service or through the actual project that we're working on together. So I go through that with them. And at the end, I say, look, if this is speaking to you, you know already. And you know, this is going to be great. Please hire me. Let's work together. But if it's not, that's okay, because there are so many amazing creatives out there who would love to do this work with you. And I can help you partner with one of them. I can pair you with somebody who fits. And that approach has helped me so much because it helps me advocate for myself and it helps me create working relationships that are mutual, that we're like both on the same page and we're both like excited about the same thing together. But it also helps me give jobs to people I love that need work. And it helps the individual that I had that meeting with leave the meeting with a positive feeling about me. Because what I found through doing this for so many years is that oftentimes that person leaves that company and goes work somewhere else. And they remember the pitch that I gave them about my work. And so they end up hiring me later. And sometimes those people start new companies and they hire me at those companies. So it's been a really wonderful way to say no through like a mutual decision where we're both working to that together. And we both are able to articulate and realize what we do and do not want, which has been really a nice strategy for me.
What works for you personally for finding new clients? Is it still word of mouth? Because one of the disparities I found is that, I mean, it's amazing to have a public profile and it definitely helps in general in life. But the way new leads find you is still largely word of mouth, at least for me. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, there, like every freelancer, I have times where I get a dry spell, especially because of the pandemic. It's been rough out here, so there's less work to go around. Word of mouth has been delightful for that reason. I usually, because of, I work a lot in the tech and media industry, people hop around a lot. So usually it's like the same people I work with. They just hop from company to company and hire me, which has been really nice. But I also like, if there's a couple weeks or a couple months where I go without much as far as inquiries go, I keep my Dribbble profile updated. I use working, not working, and that works really well for me. I even keep LinkedIn updated. I make sure that all of those things are updated, and I do still get inquiries through all of them. So I make sure that I stay on top of that. And I also do a lot of pitching to companies. So if I have an idea of something I want to make for a company, I'm not shy of creating a pitch and sending it to them. And you know, sometimes they say, a lot of times they say no, but sometimes they say yes. So I've learned to, whenever you work for yourself, you got to fight for yourself. You just have to get comfortable and more used to doing it. And I've had a lot of practice, so I'm not afraid of rejection at this point because I've gotten a lot of it, but I'm pretty good at advocating for myself and trying to fight for the opportunities that I want.
And for everybody who's listening, you don't have to be at the level of Meg Lewis to start fighting for yourself. You start doing that at a smaller scale, like today, whenever you are in your career path, right?
Exactly. Yes. Everybody. I mean, it doesn't matter how many followers you have or like what clients you've worked with before. The quality is like the pitch, what the pitch looks like, what the story is you're trying to tell, how you're selling yourself. And if you can get those in the hands and send them out to the hands of the people that need to see them, then you're on an equal level as anybody else, because you're doing great work. You're fighting for yourself. And that's really the best that you can do.
This is a wonderful note, but I do have another question for you today before yeah. we wrap up. And that one is, it's a pretty big one. Do you think that web design is dead because they're like common trends that we see? And what is this relationship between personal style and those design trends that we see? The flat humans, this very similar typography. How yeah. do you stand out in this ocean of similar, beautiful websites?
Absolutely. That's an important question to ask. And I think like it's hard too, because my personal style has always pretty much been the same for the last, you know, many, at least 6, 7, 8 years. So I've kind of had that issue where trends have kind of merged into my style and like they've kind of gotten close to my style. And at first I was like, it was very exciting because I was doing something that like brands really wanted. And then I think everybody kind of got hip to the power of having personable, friendly design in their marketing. And so now a lot of brands are working within my style, kind of on paper. It's not really the same. Nobody knows all the nuances behind my style. And so it's been a wonderful time for me because I work in that style and it's popular. But I also worry a lot of the time about, because trends have overlapped a little bit with my personal style, of what happens when trends move away from my style and then I look like I'm dated all of a sudden. Even though I've never changed and nothing's really happened here, that worries me. And I think it kind of goes along with what you're saying with trends and web design. And I think what I'm actively trying to do is a lot of the same exercises of asking myself why these things are happening. Why are trends happening? And assessing why I'm making these decisions if I'm designing and creating a solution for a brand. Because I think a lot of times we're used to this because we're told, again, to study what other people do that are successful and just do that. So of course, you see a brand that's really successful and you're like, okay, I'm just going to do that. And that's largely why this flat design and personable friendly design thing has happened, because a company like, I don't know if you remember this, but maybe, oh man, what year was it? Like 2013, 2014, maybe. Oscar Health was like the first brand to be really friendly. The first brand that was not traditionally seen as a friendly industry. They were being really friendly with their illustration style. It was huge, groundbreaking. And the design industry at the time was like, wow, this is huge and they're successful. So we also need to do this right now. And then all of a sudden it blew up and every brand wanted to look friendly and personable. That was in like every space, whether it was banking or insurance, it didn't matter anymore. You didn't need to look stark and authoritative to be taken seriously. You actually needed to look like you had some personality behind your brand and that you were made by humans. And so I think assessing, again, keeping that in your head and assessing why you're making the design decisions that you are making. Are you making them because you're studying other people and just doing it because it looks like it's going well for them? Or is there a way that you can actually redefine some sort of space and do something that's experimental and something that maybe is going to turn some heads or give you some frowns? Maybe people are going to make fun of it. It's the same exercises as finally showcasing who you are as a human. It's scary because we're told to conform in order to succeed. So if you go outside of that a little bit, especially when it comes to web design, especially when it comes to like, you're doing it for a client, so there are higher stakes, right? It's scary. But I think just trying to take little tiny steps forward into doing things that are non-traditional and trying to be a little bit experimental to push those boundaries, because you know, it doesn't do anybody that much good if we're all designing the same stuff all the time. So I think constantly just assessing that in your head and being aware of why you make the decisions you make is really helpful, because I don't think that web design needs to be dead. Let's have some fun again. Let's do some more experimental stuff. And I think that it's a great start to just be assessing the decisions you make. And that's all really we can do at first.
This is amazing and very inspiring. Thanks so much for sharing your wisdom today, Meg. It was great. Share some links. Where can people find yourself online and your side projects? We're going to link to them for sure. What are your key places where you live?
Yes, thank you for asking. So on social media, my handle is Your Buddy Meg. And on the internet, my website is meglewis.com. And fulltimeyou.co is my destination for personal style, personal brand, and career fulfillment. And then if you go to meglewis.com, it will point you to everything else like my podcasts and my design work and all of that.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. And this has been wonderful. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
I will. Thank you for having me.
And here's another product featured in our Help Founders section. PPC Protect provides click fraud prevention for online advertisers. They automatically stop click fraud at source and protect your Google Ads campaigns. Head over to ppcprotect.com to learn more. If you'd like your product to be featured for free on multiple awesome shows, welcome to apply at helpfounders.com.